All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And have you ever wondered how to master real estate deals while building meaningful connections? My guest tonight, Kenny Reimer from Sacramento, spills the secrets on prioritizing relationships over transactions. Kenny, welcome to the show, man. Thrilled to have you here.
Appreciate it, Bryce. Thanks for having me.
So let's dive into the meaningful connections part of the intro there. You're mentioning that one of your main priorities is deal acquisitions. That's what really gets you excited. That's your priority these days. How do you weave connections into acquisitions? What does that mean to you?
It's a good question. So to give a little background, I came out of college, couldn't really find a job, got a job that I didn't like. I was working 40 hours a week and knew probably in the first 3 hours that it wasn't for me. So I fell into brokerage. I brokered at Marcus & Millichap for 8 years. And one of the things that I noticed after a couple years and I found some success was that there were two types of brokers. There's one that's transactional. They know the rents of the area. They know every building. They know how many units. They know all the details. And then there's brokers like me where I'm relational. My niche was I essentially just got sellers to enjoy being around me, and I build the relationships that way. So when you ask the question, what does it mean to me? I think it's approaching creating deal flow by just being a good person and getting the person that's selling you the deal to realize that the property that they've been taking care of is going to be in good hands, and they feel good selling it to you because you're going to not only take care of it, but make it easy throughout the process.
Mm-hmm. So you got started as in a brokerage doing what exactly was your start in real estate?
So I started in, I think it was 2016, under a mentor selling multifamily in the Sac area. So Marcus & Millichap, they get you to build a database on your own for the first couple of months. So you're sitting there grinding it out, finding all the seller's information and contact information and details about those types of things. And then they get you on the phone. So you're making 250 calls a week. You're trying to build meetings so that you can bring your mentor on, win listings, and ultimately transact the business.
Mm-hmm. And so what did you find was most successful for you when you got started?
That's a tough question. I think going into the meetings, knowing everything about the person. So when the new guys would, you know, after a couple of years, I got some success, and the new guys would come up to me saying, what's the secret? What do you do? And I never really knew how to answer that question. But the one thing that I did that I think not a lot of other people did was when I created the database, I tried to know everything I possibly could about the seller to the point where it was almost creepy, right? I would go on a meeting and I would figure out if the grandpa had died. I would read his obituary. I would understand their family, because ultimately what I'm doing as a broker is someone is paying to rent my brain, right? They're saying, I want to sell a building. I want you to represent me and do it for me, right? So if I'm going to help them through a situation where they're looking to sell and reorganize their portfolio, I need to know everything about them. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the one thing that really helped me stand out from the pack.
So deep research is a way that you're able to really display the connection there, because, you know, you have to care a little bit at the end of that process. Like, you must feel like you know the person by the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, I simply can't do my job unless I know as much about them. And not only just the facts surrounding their lives, but I think to employ a lot of empathy to determine, okay, how does this person make decisions? Right. And if I can understand how they make decisions, I can better represent them in the sale of their property.
Okay. So what are you doing nowadays? Like, what is it that it makes up the majority of your business here in the year 2023?
So I'm in a transitionary period. When I started in brokerage, the whole plan was to create a high income to then fund acquisitions, right? I think so often the brokers, and it's true for residential agents, commercial brokers, they make, to me, the cardinal mistake of understanding everything about what I would consider the best business in America and then never actually participating in the business.
Yeah, they're like transactional, but never investing.
They never invest, and I think it's just a terrible way of going about it, but to each their own. So I got in. I figured I will create as much income as I possibly can. I can also cherry pick the deals, right? Everyone, every broker knows that you cherry pick the best deals if you can. And then once I built up enough cash flow, I would go full time. So I started brokering in 2016. It was September 12th. I bought my first deal 2 years to the date. September 12th, 2018, bought another deal in 2020 that we went full cycle on. And so I'm now at the point where I'm going full time because in the commercial world, if I want deal flow, which I think is the pinnacle of this business, it's the only thing that matters. On the commercial side, the commercial agents need to know that I am not competition, right? If they get a great deal, they want to sell it to a buyer that's going to let them double end it and then also relist it with them when they go to sell, right? So the other agents aren't necessarily incentivized to sell me, a competing agent, their good deals. And I figured, okay, I can live on my cash flow comfortably. We're set there. And if I want the best deal flow and I want to take my business to the next level, I'm not going to compete. So I went to all the agents. I said, hey, I'm done. I'm not going to compete. Please show me deals. And so now I'm in the transitionary process of building the trust within the brokerage community so that they do feel comfortable seeing me as a buyer as compared to a broker.
Yeah, because it's, you know, sometimes when I'm calling real estate agents just to buy houses, you know, I've been in the business about the same amount of time. I started in 2015. They are often question whether I am an agent because of the confidence that I'm calling in, and maybe it's my straightforward nature, but you know what I understand of it, and you know that there is a particular amount of competition that could occur. But yeah, definitely, that's a great strategy of just calling them up and saying, hey, I'm not here to eat your lunch, I'm here to make you dinner, let's do this. What are you finding as far as deal flow when it comes to, say, the private side? Are you all public side as far as your strategy for acquisitions?
When you say public versus private, you mean finding deals by myself?
Yeah, like private side would have been like, yeah, I'm putting up a sign or throwing a letter in the mailbox, you know, something like that. Are you deploying any of those strategies for your acquisitions, or what's your main situation that gets you the leads you're looking for?
So the leads that I have gotten, so to give an example, I'm in contract right now, set to close in a couple of weeks on a small mobile home park. And that lead came from a previous client, right? So I spent the first 5 years of my life in real estate making thousands of phone calls, right? So
know a few people, yeah.
Yeah. That's so when they get ready to call me, you know, I'm of course looking at it as a buyer before I look at it as either a referring agent or just helping them dispose of the asset. So that one's from a previous client. But the most successful investors that I've worked with on the brokerage side, and I can name two that come to the top of my mind. One has 550 units right now, started in 08, and the other one has, I think, 1400 units. They are almost entirely finding deals from brokers. So do I think that I can pick off a couple deals from previous clients? Yeah, probably. But I think the majority of my energy is going to go towards building the relationships with the right brokers that are transacting a lot of velocity to ensure that I'm hopefully top three on their call sheet when they go to call for a buyer on a good deal.
So, yeah, because it's interesting. The brokers are like the connection point of the network. Beyond like letting them know that you're not a competition, what are some other ways that, you know, people listening along can help build that relationship between the person who has the deal and themselves? You know, if you're calling MLS, you're calling a real estate agent about a house, there's a relationship there that you need to be. And I like what you said, How do I become the top? How do I make the top 10 and hopefully break into the top three when a deal comes along?
I mean, it's tough. That to me is that's the hardest question, right? Because if you can unlock the answer to that, you're going to make a lot of money in this business, regardless if it's residential or if it's commercial, right? If you can create deal flow, good, profitable deals, there's no limit to where you can go, in my experience. So I would say my gut feeling, thinking through the answer to your question, is to go deep with just a few agents, right? When I would broker deals, I would get a call from, an inexperienced investor, and God bless them, everyone starts somewhere. But I would know immediately that they're new, which is fine. But then they would end the call with, "And if you ever find a good deal, call me." And you think to yourself, how many times do I hear that in one day? You can't make a business off of just asking someone every once in a while, "Oh, do you have a good deal?" You got to go deep with a couple of agents and build a true relationship. Someone, you got to be someone where the agent would actually enjoy hanging out with you, and sees you as a friend almost. Because in my experience, you can get shown deals, good deals, by not even being the best buyer, right? There's all sorts of buyers that will close cash, they'll close fast, they've got the track record, they've got the unit size, they've got the team, they have everything that I don't have. But the agent just enjoys Kenny Reimer. They just want to hang out with me and they want to go through a deal with me. So I think going deep with them.
Yeah, there's like a particular I always say, I always say to people that when I'm training them on acquisitions and things like that, I say people give deals to their friends. If someone's selling their car and or if they overhear one of their friends say, "Oh, I'm thinking about selling my car. Anybody interested?" And they're standing around like a handful of their friends, and I'm gonna get a better deal than the guy off of Craigslist or whatever when he posts it for 10 grand. I could probably buy it from my buddy for 8, and he's probably more even flexible on like the terms. Like, give me a few grand and then pay me a few grand. So really, deals are for friends. And friendship isn't really like something that you have to like create in that sense, but there is a like a certain amount of, I remember it was a video I was watching, and it said, people don't remember what you said so much as they remember how you made them feel. And I really take that approach when I'm dealing with like the real estate agents and the brokers, because if you can get into the top 10, and I do remember I asked this agent, I said, "How do I get into your list?" He's like, "No, nah, I'm good. I got enough people." So, maybe that's not a question that you want to ask people, especially when you're new, because they'll just say, "I'm good. I've got enough people to sell to deals to." And then building your portfolio. Let's talk about where that's at and what the plans are for 2024. What are you looking to acquire? What's your main strategy? If is it pivoting?
The next goal is to get to 50 units personally. So I've got partners on two deals. So if you think through my personal unit count right now, when I close in the mobile home park, it'll be 32. So I want to get to 50 doors, which I'm thinking through right now might be too light of a goal. I think I can hit that by next year, depending on where the
Middle of
market
next
goes.
year. Yep.
But one of the main goals for 2024 is I sold a deal last year to a business partner. I brokered it, and one of the clients got the money out of the deal and wanted to redeploy with me. So I'm currently looking to partner up with that person on our next acquisition. So that's one of the main goals. But honestly, I think it's market dependent, right? If we stay stagnated in this type of market where there's almost no deal flow, that'll change. If there starts to become some blood in the water, then I'm going to get very aggressive, and I've got the right pieces of the puzzle to make that happen quickly. So growth, I mean, that's not a measurable goal, and I know all the people that are crazy about goal setting will tell me that that's not acceptable. But next goal is 50 units, and then hopefully soon thereafter hit 100, and then we're off to the races.
Yeah, I think, especially if you're in the mobile home park business, 50 might be one move. So maybe I remember at my in front of my high school, I had the little sign that said, "Shoot for the moon and land in the stars" or something. So it's like I always like to bump the bar up a little bit and You know, if you come up 60% short on a goal that was 200%, you're at 120 something percent, right? So, when looking at deals, are you a deal first kind of guy, or do you prefer to have the money lined up and then go look for the next deal?
Deal first, for sure. I mean, I've told this to a million people, and I don't know if it's even debatable. If you find a great deal, the money is so easy to find, right? Like anyone that's done a few transactions and had success knows that, you start just talking about it to friends and family, and they go, "Oh, if you ever find another good deal, I've got 50 grand, I've got 100 grand, I have 500 grand," and you start to think through, okay, in this day and age, well, I should say in this specific market, it's much harder to find the deal than it is the money. So, I'm deal first. I'm constantly looking for deals. I'll figure if it's a great deal, I can figure out every other detail after.
Yeah, and sometimes people are like, I had a great deal and I couldn't raise the money, and I think to myself,
Wasn't a
probably
great
wasn't a great
deal.
deal. Or they thought it was a good deal, but one of the checklists on my acquisition sheet is called lender hesitation. So if you've got it in condition and you're getting lender hesitation, you need to redo your numbers, because they're the people who have money, and they didn't get money by not knowing what a deal is.
Yeah.
You know, like if you think it's a deal and the people you're trying to raise money from don't, they got money by figuring that out. So listen to the people who have the money, at least a little bit. You know, there is always some hesitation with some lenders, but big lenders, seasoned investors that have capital, if you're getting pushback on your deal, it's probably not a deal. So
And
look
it's
at your
all
numbers.
relative, right? I mean, every deal is relative. A good deal to someone else might be a terrible deal to me, and a great deal to me might be horrible for someone else. But when anyone comes to me and they want me to look over a deal for them, I just say, "Tell me the story. Why is this undervalued? Why are you getting a good deal?" Right? Because if it's been on LoopNet for 90 days and you're the only one making the offer, I think we all know that it's probably not a great deal.
Yeah, you have to figure out like what's the edge? Why is it that you were able to crack this egg and nobody else could, and maybe nobody else wanted to? So, you know, when you're building relationships for people to either invest money or invest, you know, to get you a deal, how do you build that like no trust framework that's so important for people to actually give you opportunity? What are you doing these days? Maybe social, maybe websites, networking events, you know, that sort of thing.
I don't know, actually. I mean, I'm trying to think through the first couple deals I did were all relationship building through the brokerage business. So I was approaching that in a way of being the trusted source of helping them sell it when it got to that point. And I almost think it's an impossible question, right? Because I'm just myself. I guess people
Yeah,
are
I'm
just
just doing me.
gravitate towards me, Like I don't know if someone doesn't have that energy and they find that people don't naturally gravitate to them, I'm not sure it's like a fake it till you make it type of situation, right? I've just found that I try and employ empathy, I try and be a good person. But I guess now that I'm thinking through it, the one thing that I always do, whether it's a seller, a buyer, an agent, is counsel them with the truth, right? Counsel them with the truth. Think through their incentives and constantly be making sure that your incentives align. That's it. Because if your incentives align, there's no reason not to do a deal.
So what would you say is your unfair advantage in this business? You know, what comes easy to you that other people might find difficult to do? Because for a lot of people, like I had an EMT on the podcast the other day, and he took a minute for him to think about it, but he said, I'm willing to put in the work. And then he looked at his job and he said, yeah, the long hours, right? Because an EMT is doing like 12, 14 hours. So his like personality type allows him to do the real estate grind, which is like, I've got a job and I'm investing. I've got a job and I'm investing until I don't have that job anymore. So of your career so far, what would you say other people find difficult, what you find easy to do?
I think emotional intelligence, and
Okay, yeah.
to go back to part of the earlier part of the conversation, when new agents would come to me, they would ask, What does it take to be successful in brokerage, or what does it take to be successful in investing? And I've thought a lot about that question, and I'm not sure I formulated an answer. I've even talked to other brokers trying to formulate a good answer. And I think in the real estate business, it's a whole host of things, right? Like you have to understand the numbers. You have to understand at least the basics of economics. You have to understand the incentives of all the different parties that come into play, whether you're in a transaction or you actually own the deal, right? Escrow, managers, inspectors, everybody. But I think if you have all those things, but you don't have emotional intelligence, it makes it very difficult to be the type of investor that can take down off-market deals where they're going direct to seller, build the relationships with brokers, right? Like you have to understand in real time what makes someone tick, right? So for instance, I've done deals where, they're direct and I'm negotiating in person. Like I don't have time to think through like, oh, this should be my next move and calling someone for assistance, right? Like I'm arms up on the bed of the truck, negotiating a deal, standing at the property that this person owned for years. And I think without emotional intelligence and being able to think through what this person is thinking and maybe more importantly, feeling, I'm dead in the water. There's no, then I'm just thinking about what Kenny wants, not what's going to be a win-win. And I know that's such an overused term in real estate, but truly it's got to be a win-win and you got to make the person feel comfortable with you. And I think the basis of being successful with that idea is emotional intelligence.
Yeah. And one thing I do find, when doing real estate transactions, like finding the private side and dealing with the owner directly, that win-win thing that you mentioned, it's like, I found that the best deals are the ones where we're both relatively unsatisfied. Like no one's like crying about it, but they're like, I wish I got a better deal. You wish you got a better deal. But the primary motivation is that we did a deal. And that's what they're most happy about, is that they made the transaction. I'm not thinking, oh, this is the best deal ever. They're not thinking it's the best deal ever. But the transaction takes place because I'm able to find, like, why are we even standing? Why are we leaning on this truck talking about this anyway?
Yeah.
It's people, not property.
And I, to your point, I think it's identical, like the whole idea of, because I'm sure the people listening are going, how do I find good deals, right? Like that's the primary question that everyone's asking themselves. How do I find good deals and put myself in a position to buy them? And I think to your point, it's identifying people where you're solving their problem, where they're not financially motivated. And I used to hear people say that on podcasts and I would think to myself, that's ridiculous, right? I was just in Kenny's brain thinking, how could someone that owns a $3 million building not be financially motivated? But it's true. People get to a point in their lives where it's not really about the money anymore. They want to sell to someone that they feel good about. They don't want to go through a listing process. And these people will knowingly leave 500 grand on the table, $1 million on the table. They'll do it.
Yeah. And especially what I've found in the single family space is that when the motivation to have the problem solved is greater than the money that they get, they might like, yes, we got to like give them enough to like get to the next spot and, there's enough to clear title and all that. But that's really their motivation. They're like, can I clear title? Can I get out of here? Do I have to take all this old furniture and boxes? And if you can solve all of that, the price is not really what they're buying. It seems like they're buying a solution. And I like what you're saying. It's like they're going to leave equity on the table, because you've positioned yourself as a solution to their, what am I going to do with that building, 20 years down the road? What am I going to do with this thing? I just hope it ends up in the right hands. And then, So, when it comes to building and maintaining those connections, what kind of systems are you employing, or what kind of tactics are you employing to like keep those lists alive? Because sometimes brokers, even when you're friends with them, just don't have deals, but you still want to like connect with them. I always still call them up and just, hey, you got anything? And the answer sometimes is no. And how do you keep those connections alive so that you're thought about first?
I mean, first and foremost, right? When someone will send out their, if a broker sends out the email blast and it looks like a cool listing, but it's not for me, it's like, I'll send a quick email to congratulate someone, right? Like the,
Oh,
I
that's
feel
a good
like,
strategy. I like that.
yeah, checking the box of the minimum things to do to at least put yourself in the conversation, right? Like an email takes 5 seconds. There's no reason I shouldn't do that. But what I've been thinking about lately is trying to deconstruct what made me feel good when I was the broker, right? Because I've been there. I know how it feels. And I started to think through, why did I call the certain buyers that I called? And what I have found is I called them because of their reputation. And everyone says, oh, reputation, reputation. And it's not necessarily the guy owns a 5,000 units and drives a Bentley, right? I really don't think anyone cares about that kind of thing. It's, is the person easy to work with? Will they make me look good to the seller? Will they close the deal? And most importantly, when they get ready to sell it, will they relist it with me? Right. And so the biggest owners that I've ever worked with, it's a non-starter. Like if you sell them the deal, you're getting the listing again when they go to sell it. And so that's why, but then the problem for someone that's new and maybe even to a degree, my situation is how do you get the first deal to then prove to the market when you go full cycle that yes, I do relist. And of course you can tell people, but right, the proof is always in the pudding. You've got to prove it to people. So I think keeping the agents warm, right? Like there's a couple agents I see at the gym, and I go up, I say, hey, I ask them how their kids are, because I mean, frankly, because I actually give a shit about these people. They're human beings, and I care about them as people before I care about them as vessels of getting me good deals, right? And I think because I'm authentic in that, they feel it, right? You can try and pretend with an agent. You can send them wine, but like if you truly actually care, the deals just come to you, in my opinion, because
Well, they
people
get a
want to
lot
work
of
with
that
good
too,
people.
right? They get a lot of that stuff too. They can tell, to some degree, agents are pretty good at determining person for what's real and what isn't real. Like they can tell if you're brand new by like after training people in acquisitions and into real estate, I know how people sound when they're brand new, and that
Yeah.
you get a sense for that. One thing I've always thought about doing is like actually signing the relisting agreement with them and leaving the date blank and just actually putting my paper on it and committing to that. But I've never actually had to do that. But I'd imagine that that might give a little bit of certainty. But at the end of the day, I like what you said. You have to go full circle and like prove it. Prove that you're
Yeah.
going to relist with me. And then things really start to roll because now they're getting at least maybe two commissions, maybe three commissions. Maybe they double in it on the front and they take one piece on the exit. Or if they're lucky, they get four commissions on one property. So at least you can guarantee at least like two or three if they brought it right to you. So definitely interesting. So what type of deals are you looking for these days?
I mean, just like any investor, right? Just great deals. If someone came to me with a house that's 60% what it's worth and it's a piece of shit, of course I'm going to buy it. But
Here,
primarily,
I'll be a realtor. What's your buy box?
yeah, I know. But to answer your question, I'm looking for multifamily deals where I can add value, I can obtain reasonable debt to limit my downside. In locations that I would feel comfortable sending my wife alone.
That limits a lot of things for me, but yeah, I mean, you can definitely find it. I had the same conversation with Investor the other day. I said to them, I said, why are you investing in this thing? And they're like, oh, I don't know. This person got me in the deal. I was supposed to be in another deal. Now they're putting my money in this deal. And I said, would you stand outside of this thing after like 7 o'clock? And or would you even live there? And they're like, no. I'm like, then probably don't invest your money in that. Like,
Yeah.
you don't want to be doing that. There's areas of town where you can get maybe less units, but at least you'd feel proud. Cash flow in areas like that always look better on paper than they do in the actual execution of the deal, where tenants and toilets and termites is the three T's. So it's like, yeah,
Yeah.
watch where you put your money, and I like what you said. Don't invest where you wouldn't send your wife after 6 o'clock. So if people want to send you deals, people want to like connect with you, they want to learn more about you. I know we got our Instagrams on the video here, but what do they do? Where should they, where can they find you? What should they do?
I'm trying to get more active on social, so Instagram at Kenneth, which is on the screen here, but I prefer a personal connection, so email me. If you guys have questions, if you need help, look over deals, if you have deals, of course, email me, KennyReimer75@gmail.com.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I really appreciate your insight, and from broker to investor, really gives everyone listening along here a very interesting perspective on why a broker or agent will give you a deal versus somebody else. And I think we hit it on the head: is be genuine, and actually like figure out what makes them tick. And then you'll get the opportunities to get into their top three, so that deals are easier to come by than having to dial for dollars all day like when you started. So really appreciate your time, Kenny.
Likewise, thanks for having me.
No problem. And until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.